Good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter here at KUNM. Today we're talking about that big portion of the American population that doesn't vote, either because they can't or because they won't. Are you frustrated with politics and not going to vote in this election cycle? Do you feel like your vote won't matter? Maybe you've never voted. What keeps you from the polls? Or do you really wish you could vote this year, but something's standing in your way? What is it? We want to hear from you. Give us a call this morning at 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org or tweet letstalknm. Quick reminder to people listening this morning, if you do want to vote this year but are not yet registered, the last day to do it is this coming Tuesday, October 9th, and the election is in November. That'll be on November 6th. Oriana Sandoval is here with us this morning. She's the executive director with the Center for Civic Policy, which works to connect people to the public policy decisions that affect their lives. Good morning, Oriana.
Good morning, Marissa.
In your work, what are some of the problems people encounter in getting registered to vote?
So we've seen that the voter registration deadline in New Mexico presents a problem. So New Mexico has one of the earliest voter registration deadlines in the country. It's 28 days prior to the election day. So this year, the voter registration deadline, like you mentioned, is October 9th, and election day is November 6th. And studies have shown, and anecdotally we know, that people don't start paying attention to the election and to candidates and to issues generally until that last month leading up to the election and probably those couple of weeks leading up to election day. So at that point, it's too late. If you're paying attention, you want to participate, and you're not registered to vote, or your registration isn't up to date, then you're opted out from participating in that election day.
Yeah, and I know Common Cause is calling for same-day registration. That's something that they're working on. So, like, you would be able to register to vote on election day proper. Is that something that you advocate for as well?
Yes, absolutely. We advocate for that. There have also been legislative bills to try to shorten the deadline to 14 days or even through early vote period, what would bring it up to 3 days before election day. So any of those measures would be an improvement.
So are there also barriers for folks getting out to the polls or accessing a ballot? And have you seen voter intimidation tactics?
We've seen this particularly in rural communities where, in order to register to vote, you have to go to your county clerk's office. So for some New Mexicans, that may be a 2 or 4 hour one-way trip to go to your county seat. Also, in rural New Mexico, back in 2012, we saw some voter intimidation tactics at the polls where there were long lines on election day and poll workers called the sheriff's office out to patrol the voting place. So that definitely had a chilling factor and an intimidation factor, particularly for this community where it was predominantly people of color.
And is there misinformation out there, too, about, like, who can register to vote, for instance? I was talking to people this week about why they don't vote. I ran into someone who said, I can't vote because I was convicted of a felony. But that law is different here in New Mexico, right?
Yes, we're fortunate here in New Mexico to be a state where if you're a convicted felon and you've completed the terms of your sentence and your parole, you can have your voting rights re-enfranchised. However, there are administrative barriers to that and also a lack of education and outreach to ex-felons about this. So, you know, we do need to have some fixes where the county clerk's offices and the courts are communicating better with each other in order to facilitate this, as well as outreach to our community members to know that they can have their rights reinstated.
Yeah, and actually I have a little bit of tape from that conversation that I had this week, and we did a series of interviews with folks about why they don't vote or won't vote. And so we're going to be playing those throughout the show today, too.
I'm Henry Chavez, and I'm not voting because I'm a convicted felon.
So actually, after you complete your parole and all that stuff, you can still register?
No. As far as I understand, the laws in New Mexico say that once you're a convicted felon, that's it. I do wish I could vote. The government you know, plays a big role with respect to laws and felony convictions in the prison system, probation, parole, the jails, all that stuff. You know what I mean?
I don't mean to disagree with you, but I did look it up yesterday. And once you've done your time and you have completed your parole and probation, you can register.
First time I ever heard that. But, okay.
Well, which, that's also a problem, right? Like, if people don't know.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that.
Right. So I was really struck by that conversation because he is really engaged. He wants to vote. He knows why he wants to vote. He knows about the policies that are going to affect his life, right? But he just didn't have the information that he needed, right?
Mm, exactly. Yeah. Also, that's why it's critically important that we fully fund our Secretary of State's office and our county clerk's offices so that they have sufficient resources to be able to do the very important work, outreach work, education work to voters across the state.
So do you also work with folks who are new citizens, and how do they get connected to the voting process?
Yes. So Center for Civic Policy works very closely with a lot of civic engagement groups across the state, many of whom work directly with the immigrant community. And at the naturalization process, through the naturalization process, voter registration is an automatic piece of that. Once you go through the ceremony, you can register to vote right there on site, and many people do. However, again, when it comes to information and outreach, that's also critically important, and that's why community groups, in collaboration with county clerk's offices and the Secretary of State, it's really important that we're educating our community members about the opportunity to register to vote when you're a new citizen.
Do you hear from people who wish they could vote, but they cannot?
Mostly it has to do with the registration process again. So especially young people who may be first-time voters or who tend to move around a lot because they're going to school, they're moving around, they're moving out of their parents' house. And once they're engaged and paying attention to the election cycle and they want to vote, they've missed that opportunity because of the registration deadline.
So your organization's overall goal is to connect people to the processes and to public policy. But do you encounter people who feel very distanced from politics and politicians?
We have seen that, and it's interesting if you look at the voter registration trends, especially among youth, they're tending to not select a party and to register as DTS or decline to state. And I think that's interesting because so those folks who are actually opting in to register aren't feeling a connection to the party system or to political ideologies necessarily. And so I think maybe that plays a trend as well, that plays a part in especially young folks and other people, disenfranchised communities, not feeling opted in, not feeling like they have a voice or have a real chance to participate in the democratic process and therefore don't participate.
All right. Arden Kukati of Zuni Pueblo is a member of the Native American Voting Task Force. Good morning, Arden.
Good morning.
So you've been doing voter outreach initiatives in Zuni for a long time. When you're doing that work, what are some of the reasons you hear from folks about why they don't vote?
Well, as the lady just indicated, you know, I think there remain a lot of different variables. And primarily, I think for the most part, a lot of people don't really, you know, take it to heart and really think about how, you know, we are in the mainstream of the society today where, you know, we clearly understand there's a pretty good, you know, diversity of life in what everybody does in terms of Native people. However, you know, most people don't really come to also a fruition of understanding that, you know, majority of the, well, all of the New Mexico tribes here are federally recognized tribes. And, you know, within that mainstream society, you know, we need to start really educating our community people of understanding that, you know, we're dependent on state and federal funding for health care, welfare, food benefits, housing, water, education, elderly, and the list goes on. So I think those are some of the parameters that majority of the people don't really, you know, seriously think about how it really is something beneficial as, you know, having the state citizenship and being a Native American within your respective community. So those are some of the variables that we're kind of evaluating and measuring to see how we can improve and cultivate and motivate people to at least educate them and hopefully have them start participating in when it comes to the voter, the voting times for state and national elections. And, you know, it's good to know that if there are other continuing barriers, such as that maybe October 9th is a little too early to have a deadline for last day to register and things of that nature. Those are the kind of things that we're looking at to measure and evaluate so we can make our recommendations through the Secretary of State.
Yeah, and what kind of conversations do you have with people when you're trying to talk to them about why they might want to vote?
I've been invited to a couple of candidate forums, and the folks that are coordinating and sponsoring these candidate forums allow the county election folks, representatives, and people that are on the task force to, you know, get on the agenda and really talk about how we're trying to really make a very broad outreach and express the, you know, the idea of trying to empower one another and try to get people to understand why voting is so critical and important in where we are today. And what are the things that we're trying to educate the community about is, you know, over 70 years ago, there's a man from Isla de Pueblo by the name of Miguel Trujillo Sr., who was a Marine Corps veteran that was denied the right to vote in an election. And because of him having the, you know, the effort of appealing the denial and his identity as a United States citizen, and most importantly, as a Native American, you know, he challenged the government for his right to vote. And so when the federal courts decided in favor of Mr. Trujillo, you know, from that point in time, the New Mexico Native American citizens were given full rights of citizenship and the right to vote. And I think having to try to really educate, you know, historically of what's happened and, you know, how we were looked upon way back then and where we are today, we really need to look at all the different, you know, people of age that are eligible to vote and get them registered and to understand that we need to continue this legacy and exercise our right, you know, to participate in the American democracy. But it really, you know, warrants a lot more of educational outreach and informational settings to where you almost have to make yourself present consistently for people to want to start kind of like sort of like tuning into you and really start listening and mm-hmm. understanding of what, you know, what's really going on today.
Yeah. Do you feel like maybe some folks feel a little disconnected from the political process or don't hear the things that they care about being talked about by candidates?
I agree with that statement. I think majority of, like, I represent Zuni as well as Laguna and Acoma. And for being from Zuni, I think a majority of the folks feel very disconnected because, you know, they really don't get the, you know, comprehensive overview of, you know, candidate information or when folks are running for whatever position that they're vying for, you know, they never show their presence to put a name on the face of the person that's running. So I think those are some of the, you know, impediments that people say, well, I don't know who these people are or, you know, how are they going to represent me or my vote don't really mean anything to them or that type of a thing. But I think in Pueblo country, for tribal leaders, that sometimes creates an obstacle when you go lobbying out and, you know, they look at the percentages and the statistics of, you know, voting numbers in Pueblo country. So, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, pros and cons of how people really need to start becoming fully aware on, you know, how it really does, you know, help in general of what we depend on.
All right, Arden. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. We're talking about some of the reason folks don't vote today. Do you live out of town, in the mountains or other rural areas? Do the things you care about get enough attention from candidates? Do you vote? Is it challenging to get out to the polls? What do you do? Or are you a new citizen? Do you have the information you need to register or to get out to the polls? Do you feel nervous about the process? Give us a call this morning at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from New Mexico Tech, presenting Socorro Fest October 5th and 6th on the Plaza. Music by Hotel California and G's Louise, plus a chili cook-off, car show, and Trinity site, Very Large Array, and Hamel Museum tours. Info, socorronm.org.
In 2013, Caroline Shaw became the youngest winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Music. She was 30 years old. Her ambition and expressive ability as a composer have only continued to grow. New music by Caroline Shaw on the way from a concert by the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We're talking about the barriers people face in voting today and also about what might frustrate you or make you feel disconnected from the political system. Join the conversation this morning. Call 277-5866. Our reporters hit the streets in Albuquerque this week to speak with folks who don't vote. Here are two people who wish they could.
My name is Ray Skrupskis, teacher at Gordon Burnell Charter School. Social studies and English. In the US since 1984. I'm English, so I can't vote because I'm not an American citizen. I tend to think if you live in the country, you should be able to vote, but I understand why they want you to be a citizen. So it doesn't really bother me. I encourage people to get involved in the process, and I tell people, yeah, I don't really care what your opinion is. You can have whatever opinion you want, but do get involved. I mean, if you don't, then you can't really complain if things don't go the way you want them to.
My name's Alexis Bernadek. I am 21. I have lived here since 2004. I can't vote because I'm not a citizen yet, but I would gladly love to be a citizen in 2020. I am going to be, and I will get myself involved in the election. I would hate to be in Mexico because this is my life, working and going to school. I consider myself a patriot. I like contributing to a good nation.
All right. Rachel Smith is the policy director for Albuquerque Healthcare for the Homeless. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you don't need a home address to vote, right? Do you think people know that? And how does it work?
That is correct. You do not need to have a traditional residence to vote. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions for our clients. I talk to people all the time that say, well, I don't have a home, so I can't vote. And that's not true. It's not true in any of the 50 states, actually. So to overcome that, you can include the address of the shelter that you might be staying at. You can also include the place that you spend most of your nights, so maybe a park or an intersection. And then you can also draw a map of the place where you reside. And as long as you include a mailing address, someplace where you can get your mail, then you can overcome that barrier.
What are some of the other barriers for people experiencing homelessness, getting registered, or getting out to the polls?
So I think misconceptions are a big one, not knowing if they can because of a residence or thinking they must have an ID to vote. And also what we've already spoke about if you've been convicted of a crime, people think that they can't vote because of that. So overcoming those misconceptions is a big barrier. Also a lack of resources and getting to the polls. Transportation is a huge barrier for people that are experiencing homelessness. Just figuring out the bus system or trying to figure out how they're going to get to the polls that day on election day can be very challenging. And then also people feel that it could be overwhelming and intimidating to go to the polls. And if you've never voted before, it can be a kind of intimidating process. And people are worried about doing it wrong and they don't want to go there and mess it up. And so I think that lack of information on what's needed to get there and what you need once you get there.
What kind of support does Albuquerque Healthcare for the Homeless provide for people who want to be part of the process?
So we do a lot of voter registration at Healthcare for the Homeless. We work really closely with our partners. League of Women Voters comes out, and we'll sit in our resource center and register people. We've worked with other community partners and national partners, like the National Association of Community Health Centers and the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. So we do engage in a lot of voter registration drives and walk people through the process of voter registration. People on our staff are also certified to register people to vote. So we can help people with that process. We also have bus passes. We have daily bus passes for people that are accessing our services, and we give those out freely, and we'll be doing that a lot on Election Day. And in the past, we've organized transportation for people. We have our own agency vehicles where we can take people to the polls and mobilize. Back in 2008, actually, our CEO was involved in that, and really she went exactly with people to the polls and sat with them and walked them through the process just to kind of lessen those barriers and that uncertainty with voting. And we ended up winning an award that year because we registered the most amount of people to vote nationally in the community health center movement.
Yeah, and nationally there are some interesting solutions to making polls accessible to people, right? What have you come across in your work?
Yeah, nationally, our partners are doing really great things. So they will bring in, we do this too, sample ballots so people can look at what the ballot might look like and can walk through that process beforehand. People have brought in actual voting booths and walking people through that. You can also inquire about becoming a polling station, which I think is a great idea. And some of our partners across the country have done those sorts of things as well. So there's great opportunities to get people involved in the voting process.
Right. And if you are a polling center, then people can come to you for the services that they were seeking anyway. And kind of while they're there, also cast a ballot, right?
Exactly. And that idea that it's intimidating and uncomfortable to go to a place that you don't know and go through a process that you don't know, that would take away some of those barriers there.
Right. And the transportation issue is, as you mentioned, is significant because people are trying to get, you know, elsewhere in town as well and
exactly.
trying to make the day, you know, go the way they need it to.
Yeah. People that are experiencing homelessness are forever walking from place to place all day long, trying to get to appointments and reach different benefit offices. And transportation is always one of those barriers to a lot of different things to exiting homelessness. And being able to get to the polls on voting day is just another thing to add to that list of walking around all day or trying to figure out the buses and waiting. So it's a huge barrier, and that's why we work really hard to see if we can get people transportation through either our bus pass system or through getting people into our agency vehicles and actually taking them to the polls ourselves.
All right, we're going to take a call from Barbara in Albuquerque. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question or comment for us this morning?
Yeah, my question is, I have a friend who had a green card. He's now a citizen. But when he had a green card, he mentioned to me that although people with green cards cannot vote in national elections, they can vote in local elections. And that just sounded, you know, it didn't sound right to me. So I was wondering what the facts are. I don't know if maybe it varies from state to state, and I also don't know what he meant by local. So I was wondering if anyone could comment on that.
Yeah, so we actually have Lana Atkison here in the studio this morning. She's a UNM professor. Lana, do you know something about this issue?
You can't do that here, but there are places across the country where sort of municipalities that allow different groups of voters to vote, including non-citizens in some places. It's not prominent, but it does exist in some places, not in New Mexico.
Not in New Mexico. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that question, Barbara. I appreciate it. Lana is the director for the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy, and a professor at the University of New Mexico. We've been talking a lot about the specific barriers that people face in getting registered and getting the polls. Is what we've been hearing today in line with your work on with what your work on this shows?
Sure, there's an institutional side to barriers to voting. I would say add to the idea of EDR or changing our the number of days before that you have to register before the election. That automatic voter registration is something that, you know, the state is then responsible for registering people. If we combined AVR, automatic voter registration, with EDR, election day registration, we'd cover all citizens. So that would be the best sort of election reform from my perspective in terms of getting people eligible to vote.
Have we seen that elsewhere? Have both of those things been in place in
California?
Other states, in California? And did it help? Did it help with the voter turnouts?
Yeah, I mean, it helps with voter. You know, these are complex things. So, for example, in Oregon and Denver, or in Oregon and Colorado, they have all mail balloting. And so that's sort of been a real resource in terms of picking up voters across elections, making turnout higher.
Yeah. So we have an email comment this morning from Chris, who says, for our democracy to function, there has to be mandatory civics education in high school, including proxy voting and visits to city council and county commission meetings. What do you think about that idea, Lana?
I think that anything you can do to socialize people into the process of voting, I do think that there is this barrier for people who've never experienced voting, that they go, you know, I don't know it, how to do that. It's complex. There's some sort of fear associated with that. I take my kids to vote every time I go vote. I recommend everyone do that. I think that that kind of socialization process is really important. So in the schools, in the public schools, for example, or even in the private schools, you can get voting machines for prom or for, you know, school elections so that students get to experience that in that environment. The Secretary of State sent out letters this year to young people who are eligible by voting day, but are in that sort of, you know, period where they're going to turn 18 when they're not able to register. And she said, no, you can register. So she's actively pursuing those people. So tearing down these barriers, both socially and civically, is important.
Yeah. And does your research show that doing that, taking your kids to the polls, that being around adults who vote, does that, you know, definitely have an impact down the line?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, politics is hereditary in some ways. You know, people who are Republicans, you know, their parents are Republicans, and people who are Democrats, their parents are Democrats. So the more active your parents are, the more likely you are to participate. It's in your home. Again, the civics is all around you. And that's important to socialization.
What does the research also tell us about, you know, who votes? Do people who have more advantages, who have more privileges, do they feel more access to the political process, for instance?
Well, they just have more resources. So resources are definitely, you know, connected to voting. So the more political resources you have, the more education, the more income, all of these things affect your voting. You have time. You're in work environments where politics is important, where people are talking about politics. It could be socially important in your workplace to participate in those. So that happens when you're in more educated environments, when you're in higher income environments. So those kinds of things, yeah, we see a resource bias. So the people who are participating in elections don't exactly look like the electorate, the people who could be participating. They're more wealthy, they're whiter, they're more educated.
So we all have complex identities that are intersections of race, gender, socioeconomics, religion, much more. How can this factor into a decision to vote or not vote?
Yeah, this is actually a complexity, actually, because if you're, you know, intersecting across different groups that lead you to different voting decisions, so different social groups, you know, have different voting priorities. And so if you're cross-cutting those, you're actually less likely to vote because it's more confusing for you. It's like, well, I'm getting cues from my different groups. One group tells me I should do this. One group tells me I should do this. So maybe I'm indifferent.
Mm-hmm. I keep hearing from people that they are just tired of how divided everything is politically. They feel like we're looking at extremes, at two sides that will never come together. Does the research show that this has a positive or negative impact on voter turnout, or maybe no impact?
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes positive, sometimes negative. So the net result of that is people don't like the conflict of politics, but really, if anything, it seems that conflict actually mobilizes people more than demobilizes people.
So we see greater turnout when it's like this.
More competitive the election, the more attention, the more people participate.
All right, we're going to take a call from Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, I have just a quick question. have a friend that's going to be sworn in as a citizen this month, but it's after October 9th. So this person can't register. Why do we close registration a month before the election?
I don't know the answer to that. Does anybody know why it is the way that it is right now? Does anyone have any sense?
You know, I think it was a technology issue primarily, where county clerks needed that time to be able to process mostly paper forms and get people into the system in time for the election day. However, now we have online voter registration that uploads people to the Secretary of State's database instantaneously, and county clerks as well. Now we have computers, we have networks. So that, you know, I think the times have changed and the administrative processes have changed. And I agree. I think our voting laws need to reflect that change in technology.
I feel also like we talk about this, we talk about things like voting laws, you know, right as the election's approaching. And then, but we need to think about it, you know, after that, like during a legislative session or during the times when people are making those laws. But maybe it's hard to keep the focus at those times because it kind of shifts to other things. Have you seen that in your work as well, Oriana?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Professor Atkinson mentioned AVR. And so over the last few years, community advocates and legislators, along with the Secretary of State, have put a lot of focus on that to shift the paradigm where it really is the government's responsibility to increase access to voting and to the democratic processes and take the onus off of the individual voter. And so, yes, I think there has been a shift to make sure that we codify that in state law.
And one of the things that you have mentioned also, Lana, is that, you know, it's on the government to create access and it's on the candidates to create interest and connection, right?
You can have great election administration, but if you don't have a competitive election, turnout really declines. The candidates really are the mobilizing factor. I mean, there's certain people, it's a habit, they're going to vote no matter what. But let's look at school board, right? I mean, you get elections with 5% turnout. So the competitiveness and sort of the information level, right? People need information to make decisions. There are, there were 80 items on the last midterm election in Bernalillo County that people had to vote for. That's a lot of items. It's a lot of questions, right? Now, how do you deal with all of the information that you need to do that? So you need some campaign to really mobilize you, to draw you out to say, like, I know how I'm going to vote on this election, this contest. And so that leads you to then go to the polls and vote on others as well.
We're talking about why people don't vote today, and we want to hear from you. Around the country, voter participation is expected to surge, and people are predicting the midterms in November will see a strong turnout. Still, plenty of eligible people, even folks who are already registered, don't cast their ballots. Are you planning not to vote? Do you distrust politicians, government, and the whole political process? Are you tired of extreme rhetoric and ideological divisions? Do you dislike negative campaign ads, or are you frustrated with who's on your ballot? Maybe you wish you really could vote this year, but something's standing in your way. What is it? Give us a call at 277-5866. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org and tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Lana, this week we also reached out to the New Mexico's Green Party to find out whether the two-party system plays into decisions not to vote. We heard from some folks who say, like, they don't feel like there are candidates on the ballot who represent their views, but they're engaged people, right? So they go to the polls, they'll vote on the bonds, they'll vote on the amendments, and maybe they'll choose a candidate that they feel like gets closer to their views. Do you think a two-party system could be a culprit in lower voter turnout?
Yeah, that's really hard to say. There's a lot of research that thinks about that. What's the difference between parliamentary systems and first-past-the-post systems like ours? And it's really not clear that voter turnout is really higher in, systems that have many more parties. The reason we have a two-party system is our institutional design, the fact that whoever wins the election in any district or state office, right, wins all the representation, right? We don't have a system where, you know, if the Greens get 5% of the vote, they get 5% of the seats. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for third parties to really rise and sustain themselves. They get co-opted by the other party. People go, why am I continuing to waste my vote on a party that never wins? Mm-hmm.
Overall, where is New Mexico in terms of turnout compared with the rest of the country usually?
Oh, we're sort of in the middle usually, the middle to the lower end. Our last midterm election was, you know, one of the lowest we've seen in 20 or 30 years. So I expect us to do a lot better this time.
Yeah, we're talking about some of the reasons people don't vote today. When you were young, did the adults around you vote? How did this influence your decision to vote later in life? Or do you live in a neighborhood where there used to be a voting center, but now there isn't one? Does this stop you from getting to the polls? Give us a call this morning at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
The latest trend in opposition to the Indian Child Welfare Act is from states. Three states are suing the Bureau of Indian Affairs, saying the federal government is overstepping its authority when it meddles in child adoption. Rural states gain more ground than adoptive couples in fighting ICWA in the courts. Find out more on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Thanks to everyone who donated by mail, web, or phone. To everyone who came in to answer phones and to Parkit Place for their parking. Thanks to Savor by Steven for great lunches, Fantang again for great dinners, Whiting Coffee for coffee and Cuisine del Corazon, and Heidi's Raspberry Farm for snacks. Big thanks to Independent Vehicle Service for donating the Prius. We appreciate our Radio Frequency Club members who give year-round. We are grateful for every dollar and every bit of help. Thank you.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Are you fed up with a two-party system and feel like you can't find politicians who represent your values on the ballot? We're talking with people who don't vote today. Join the conversation this morning. Call 277-5866. KUNM reporters this week spoke with people around Albuquerque about why they choose not to vote.
I'm Simone Slaughter, and I'm not voting because if you vote, that is agreeing to whatever the president is doing, and we don't actually have our knowledge of what they're doing. I pay attention to basically what the government is trying to do. I don't want to, like, validate what they're doing and saying that it's okay. So I opt out of voting.
My name is Eric Tenorio. I'm 29. I'm from Santo Domingo Pueblo. I still don't want to vote. I don't know. There's just a lot of negative that goes on the TV. Can't really trust anybody nowadays. That's what I think. Just because of what's going on in Congress, especially with that new guy that's getting elected for the Supreme Justice Court. Like, yeah, Kavanaugh, that's kind of a turnoff right there. Like, about him sexually assaulting women. I mean, that's been going on for years with the higher-ups. What they're teaching us is that if you have money, it's okay to do whatever the hell you want.
All right. And of course, Kavanaugh has denied those allegations. Kevin from Rio Rancho is on the line this morning. Good morning, Kevin.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, good morning. I appreciate this conversation. One of the things I've been listening to is the idea that they closed the registration on the 9th. And I'm wondering if early voting that starts on the 9th plus absentee ballots start on the 9th, if that has anything to do with it. So that's my question. And then secondly, I just wanted to put out there, my wife is running for a House seat in District 57 in Rio Rancho. And, you know, people are so divisive right now, and there are so many issues out there that are emotional and really grab you and grab your attention. But it also disenfranchises the people that are really needing to get to the polls. And so if there's any, I don't know why there would be any reason to stop registration prior to Election Day. And that's really what I had to say.
All right. Thank you for your call this morning, Kevin. Lana, does that reflect, why are we seeing such polarization, such extreme views?
Wow, that's a very complicated question.
Yeah.
But it's been, you know, going on now that we've been increasing our polarization for the last 30 years. A lot of it has to do with the fact that we're very sorted. That is, we live in areas with people who are very much like us. And so we don't get to hear other views. Obviously, the internet is another one where we're locked in our own little holes, little news holes. And so not hearing other people's views, not being able to listen to other people's views really helps to polarize us even more, right? And helps to create an environment where people feel the other side is evil and different from them.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim in Albuquerque is on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
I sure can. What's your question or comment for us this morning?
Well, I'm responding to the question that you posed. And Lana?
Mm-hmm.
Is Lana Atkinson, what job do you do? I didn't hear fully what your position is.
Go ahead, Lana.
I'm a professor in the Department of Political Science.
Oh, okay, I just got confused. On another radio station at the same time you're on, there was a Linda Atkinson. Are you related to Linda?
No, I'm not.
Oh, it must be confusing for you. You must get confused, the two of you, sometimes, because you're both in public service.
So what are you thinking about this morning, Jim?
I'm responding to your question that you posed, you know, why aren't you voting? And I'm as a protest, I'm not voting anymore because neither side, there are differences between the two sides as far as their political agenda, but both sides are deaf to the petitions of the citizen. They don't listen to the individual citizen. When they get their side elected, all they're doing is fulfilling their platform. And if the legitimate need of an individual citizen under the law falls outside of their political platform, then you're just screwed, and they're not going to help you no matter what. And so, as a protest, I'm not going to play in the system anymore. Because by being guilted into voting for one side or the other or a third side, when nobody is listening to you, you're just being placated, and you're just a pawn, a tool in the system. They want you to think that you have a voice, but you don't. You know, when you vote, you're theoretically you have a voice, but you don't, because if the one you vote for gets elected to. They don't listen to you. So the system needs to go away. It needs to change. If it doesn't change, it either needs to change significantly or go away and be replaced. And all of this is described in the when this country was set up in the first place. It was for the exact same reasons that I'm saying, because the government didn't listen and they were abusing its citizens. They were abusing the citizens and not listening to the citizens. If you read the Declaration of Independence, that's exactly why people left England and formed this country.
All right, Jim. Well, thank you so much for your comment this morning. It will go to Tessa in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tessa.
Hi, it's Tessa. I just wanted to say one reason I don't vote in every election is because I live in the South Valley and we're not incorporated into the city. So oftentimes when I want to vote for city issues, I'm not allowed to because of where I live. And the other thing I just want to say in response to the guy that doesn't vote as a protest and all the other people that aren't voting for, it's, to me, it sounds like they're trying to make themselves feel good for not participating. Mm. You can't complain about the system if you don't do your share of participating. Politicians aren't going to listen to just one person. You have to be a voting bloc or whatever in order for people to listen. And I think it's not true that parties don't listen to what we want. I think the Democratic Party actually does do things for the people a lot more so than the Republican Party. The Republican Party takes away things that help people of lower incomes and older citizens as well as immigrants, whereas the Democratic Party does the opposite.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning, Tessa. Carol Miller is the founder of the National Center for Frontier Communities. She's on the line with us today from where she lives in Ojo Zarco at the southern border of Rio Arriba and Taos counties. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. Good morning. It's great. I've been listening, and I wondered if I could just make a couple of clarifications of a few items that I think might be confusing to the listeners.
Sure, go ahead.
There is a difference between election day registration and same day registration. And same day registration means people can go in and register if they're not automatically registered. They can go in, register, and vote during the early vote time. They don't have to wait till election day. When you have election day registration, it's just that one day. And I want to be clear, New Mexico has not been interested in these kinds of reforms in the past, but we hope they will be in the future. And also the thing about the institutionalization of the two-party system, the New Mexico election system is set up to enhance that. Santa Fe has walked away a little bit in Las Cruces, where they have enacted ranked choice voting, where you can transfer your vote if your top candidate doesn't win a majority. Part of the problem in New Mexico is that many candidates are in primaries end up as very much minority candidates in the general election, and that sometimes is a turnoff to people like myself as an independent who is not a member of the parties that often make it onto the ballot. I recently had an election law challenge here in New Mexico, and the state court denied it based on a 1971 Supreme Court decision, which says that the state has a compelling interest to uphold the integrity of the two-party system. So as long as we have laws and judicial support for laws that institutionalize the two-party system, it is very unfair to voters and also to candidates. So I just wanted to clarify that people like some of your callers who say they don't want to vote, the two-party system in and of itself has led to this polarization because there's really no choices. And in New Mexico, the largest and fastest-growing group of voters are people who are not selecting a party in the month of August when registrations are up, and that's the latest data we have. Twice as many people registered as declined to state no party preference in New Mexico as registered as Democrats or Republicans. So we need to, as we talk about updating the mechanics of elections, we have to also update the mechanics of who gets on the ballot access, how does it work. And, you know, our country's divided. We're really a purple country. And, you know, by having only two choices most of the time, that has led to increased polarization. And there's, you know, I just can't be convinced that that's not the case. And for rural people, there's a whole move now towards the voter centers. And I think what's interesting is they're presented as being easier for the voter. But there was a recent Pew study that was written up in Election Law Journal that says that there is no recent research that shows that early voting increases turnout. So, you know, I think we have to look at things like mail-in voting. We have to look at everyone is automatically registered, and we have to also look at how do we have a fair ballot with more choices for voters on the day of the general election.
Carol, in smaller communities where maybe everyone knows each other and the number of voters is small, do people have privacy about their voting choices?
Well, we really had it before the paper ballot because you could actually hear who voted straight party as the levers were clicked.
Mm-hmm.
You get some of that now, even with the paper ballot, because if you go in and just vote, say, for governor in this election, you're in and out pretty quickly. What I find is that, and I think it was Lana that talked about it, the other important issues that are on our ballots, whether it's bond issues, judicial retention, constitutional amendments, that a lot of people do not get enough information in advance to know how to vote on those other issues. And also there's literacy concerns that we see where some people don't understand. I mean, sometimes you vote no on a constitutional issue, and voting no actually means a yes. So the whole issue of how the legislature sends language to the voters, there was a lot of confusion around the bail issue on the last general election ballot. And then we don't really have civics education. It's like the only thing you need to do to be a good citizen in this country, or how it's presented, is show up twice during an election year in a primary if you're allowed to vote, or you show up for the general election. But aside from that, the caller who said that they don't really feel like anyone is listening, there are many people who feel like that. In the rural communities and frontier communities where I work, people challenge me and they say, tell me where something became different. You know, has child poverty been reduced in New Mexico no matter how we vote? Is there less corruption? Doesn't look like that from the ground looking up. So I think we have to really try and create a civic culture that is a permanent thing and not just related to elections.
Do you also hear from people who might live in frontier communities that, you know, they the things they care about are not represented on their ballot, or not being talked about, rather, by the candidates, right?
Well, I think we see that all the time, and we do hear that, and I feel that way. And, you know, that's why through the National Center for Frontier Communities based in Silver City, we're on year two of working with the legislature trying to say, is there a way that we can actually revive our communities? And we have a proposal in front of the legislature again this year. Last year, we passed Senate Joint Memorial 2, which is called the VIDA Project, and it's the Village Investment and Development Act. And that's where small communities are saying, no one ever asks us what we want and what we need, that people sit at higher levels and decide for us. And often it's not the right it's not the right solution because no one really identified the actual problem, the root cause of the problem.
All right. Thank you so much, Carol. We have an email comment from Mitchell Mudd, the treasurer of the Green Party of New Mexico, who says a vote for a third party isn't wasted. Rather, it helps keep more choices on the ballot. We're coming to the end of the hour today. Thank you for joining us on Let's Talk New Mexico and sharing your stories. Oriaran Sandoval from the Center for Civic Policy, Arden Kakati of Zuni Pueblo and the Native American Voting Task Force, Carol Miller from the National Center for Frontier Communities, Lana Atkinson of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy, and Rachel Smith from Healthcare for the Homeless. Thanks, everyone. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous shows. The last day to register to vote in the November 6th election is this coming Tuesday, October 9th. Special thanks to reporters Hannah Colton, Madison Sprato, and Bryce Dix for interviewing folks for our show. Join us next week when we talk about the Me Too movement and the 2018 election. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can jump in on the comment section at KUNM.org or email letstalk@KUNM.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today. Bryce Dix screened your calls. Madison Sprato live tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.